please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reading from the Vision magazine, The Test of True Devotion by Swami Ram Dass. All distinctions amongst us must be dissolved because we are all children of one God. This we should never forget when we deal with each other. Unity means strength. Strength must be achieved not for harming one another, but for helping each other, and to bring about peace and harmony among all people in the world. If we are true devotees of God, we must love all beings, because God dwells in all beings. The Lord says, that devotee is dear to him who loves all beings and creatures. When a man says he loves God and does not love his fellow beings, he is a liar. The test of our love for God is that we should love our fellow beings, to be kind to them, forgiving towards them, tolerant towards them. Our heart must go out in love towards those who are in distress, suffering, and trouble. Here we should not make any distinction. There are some people who give help only to people of the community, caste, or country to which they belong. But love must flow out towards everybody alike. Because our Atman, the Supreme Spirit, is the same in all beings of the world. If we narrow our vision and love only certain communities or certain classes of people, then we are not really loving in spirit, but only through mental or physical affinity. This is the great message which we have received from our spiritual masters, teachers, and avatars of the world. Unless our vision is universalized, unless our life mingles with the divine life, we cannot be free from the ego sense. We cannot attain that liberation, moksha, or nirvana, which we hunger for. God realization not merely frees us from rebirth or transmigration, but also grants us here and now the enjoyment of eternal bliss and peace. When we are enjoying this bliss, we will find that the pleasures of the senses are absolutely nothing. A person in pursuit of these pleasures will then be like one craving for gutter water when he has been drinking divine nectar itself. Ram Dass speaks to you from his own experience, with God in his grace has granted him. He has been experiencing this divine bliss for about 30 years now, without any break. For the last 20 years or so, Ram Dass has not been doing any sadhana, because sadhana has ceased. The person who is doing this sadhana is no more. He cannot or could not have sat before you to speak about God or universal vision or Brahman unless God had given him the authority to do so. The joy that you will get by realizing the divine within you, by realizing your identity and oneness with God, is so unsurpassed that when he sees people rushing after pleasures of the senses, he wonders how such people could be pursuing the shadows, leaving the substance behind. Every one of you is the very embodiment of divinity. Your true being is Sat Chit Ananda, absolute existence, consciousness, and bliss. You have forgotten this truth. Therefore, remember it by taking the holy, powerful name of reality until your mind disappears and you stand revealed as the truth itself, and enjoy, as Ram Dass has been enjoying, the infinite bliss which is inexhaustible. It is eternal, beyond time, space, and causation. That reality is yourself. May you all enjoy that bliss and peace by taking your mind inward and by losing it in that infinite ocean of bliss and peace. The bliss which Ram Dass is enjoying is now due to the power of God's sweet and holy name. By repeating constantly the holy name, our mind becomes still, and the latent joy within us fills us through and through. And those who are coming near us are elevated. They also get that joy. When we are filled with this bliss, we cannot but love all alike. We cannot but see the divine everywhere. The whole universe will be for us then the veritable image of our eternal beloved, whom we have found within ourselves. That is beautiful and it is perfect. I'd like to speak this evening on leading an impersonal life. It has been in the air recently that there are many interpersonal conflicts that seem to be emanating from the world in general and from members within the group. This is, from a human state, a natural condition. We identify some other person as being an irritant to ourselves. Their behavior, their thoughts, their actions in our life is seen to be as disturbing our own peace of mind. When we identify it as such, we feel that we are out of control of our own peace, that somebody else has taken dominance over us. And this is our first mistake. By relating it to an individual or a situation outside of our own being, we then pass judgment within our own mind, and then we set about trying to control our circumstances, other people in our life, and so forth, in order to get that peace which we are hungering for. Now, when we enter upon the spiritual path, we come to know that the source of our joy, as Papa points out in this writing tonight, is an internal source of joy. For most humanity, that source of joy is latent. That is, it is not being made manifest. And so we seek after sensual pleasures, we seek after making the conditions in life to our liking, in the hopes that we might experience real pleasure and real peace. All mankind is after this self-same object. That is to be happy, to be at peace, to feel spontaneous joy and contentment. How few actually achieve that goal? It is all due to the misidentification of it being in the control of others and outer conditions and circumstances. We think if people behaved in just a certain way, or that if our conditions were made better because we had a certain amount of money and so on and so forth, all these conditions would come together and come into a grand moment of happiness that would be sustained forever and ever. What a false delusion. What a false dream. And the harder we run after it, trying to control people and circumstances in our life, the more elusive the dream seems to get, the more frustrated we seem to get, the more out of control we get. The more out of control we feel, the harder we strive after it. And so it turns into a vicious struggle of striving harder and harder and feeling less and less satisfied. The less satisfied, the harder we strive. The harder we strive, the less satisfied we become. Until at last, on this wheel of misery and self-destruction, we come to the conclusion that our strategy, our way of seeking happiness, is not the correct one. And we see that there must be, that there has to be, some other means of joy, some other means of satisfaction. And it is then that we turn our mind upon our internal resources. That is to say, the soul of our soul, the spirit of our spirits, God eternal, who ever exists within us and everywhere about us. Perhaps with some dim faith at the beginning, we turn our minds towards that source, and we reach out, trying to find some bit of happiness. But, you know, we set up conditions again and again, thinking that, well, I have to be in a spiritual state of mind. I know one fellow who used to sleep in until 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and then he'd get up to meditate, and if other people were up and making noise, he'd get up and he'd resoundly scold them all for making noise while he was trying to meditate. Here they were daring to disturb his peace at the mid part of the day in order for him to be able to meditate. Always and forever, things are not right conditions on the outside, so we find reason for disturbance. If one person treats us with kindness, if somebody treats us with love, then we feel love, and we feel a bit of kindness towards our fellow man. But if somebody seemingly treats us with thoughtlessness, or somebody becomes aggressive towards us, then we become aggressive right back at them. We set our boundaries and we push them away and we use a javelin or a sword in order to cut them to the quick so that they might retreat. And so on goes the human dynamics and the human play. But all to no avail, because inwardly, inside, we are restless, we are not at peace. We have not found that eternal light for which we are seeking. We have not found a place of happiness and joy that spontaneously comes to the mind. When we come into the spiritual path, sometimes we are put into difficult conditions. Some of us think, well, if we just lived in an ashram, you know? David, why don't you have an ashram? Then we could all live and we could be happy and we'd get along so gloriously and we wouldn't have all these outside pressures. But just read the accounts of people who live in ashrams. They're a hornet's nest. Everybody's always at each other. The egos get going in grand style. And because we have that higher expectation, well, this is a spiritual place, everybody should be living a spiritual life. If they don't meet our conditions just so, well, boy, watch out for them. Because we're going to let them have it, because we know better than they how they should be living a spiritual life. And if they're not behaving in exactly the right way, we know better. And this is the way that it goes. And so it's no solution. No solution. And when we get together as a spiritual family, oftentimes we get together and it's blissful and it's wonderful and we feel the presence of God. But then there are those other times, and those little rough edges of the ego bump up against each other. And when they do, because we're in a spiritually charged environment, we feel even more ill at ease with any kind of grading notion on us at all. And so we take aim and we fire at each other, and we become so focused on how we're right and the rest of the world is wrong. You see, none of this gets to the core of the problem, which is we have shifted our attention from that internal source of joy to once again trying to control our environment, only this way, instead of just doing it in a political way, in a business way, we try to do it in a spiritual way. And that just means it's 10 times as much trouble. And don't we all know it? When I first went into the field of mental health, I thought I'd worked in the field of business for many years. And I thought, at last, I'm getting into the field of mental health. Here, people will know how to talk to each other. They'll know how to problem solve with each other. They'll be in touch with their own issues. And they'll be able to just really communicate with one another and problem solve. I've never seen worse communicators with each other, worse problem solvers with each other. I've never seen it so bad in that kind of place, in that kind of environment. It's one thing to teach somebody or tell somebody else how to do it. It's quite another to do it for yourself. And so this is the way that it is. And sometimes we get around in spiritual environments and spiritual organizations, and we think, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to live in such a place? And these people must be joyously happy. But just scratch the surface. You'll find out perhaps it's worse than any business. It's worse than any other organization that you can tap into. Because the spiritual dynamic, the energy brought in by spiritual consciousness, only amplifies everything, and that includes the ego. It includes the ego. So you see, there's no escape. Even though we think and we fantasize and we would hope. And when I was at the ashram, there too, personalities came in. People would complain bitterly about one another, you know, and they would take aim at one another. And if somebody rose up out of the ranks, and well, they were just trying to be better than everybody else. And who were they thinking? They're not Papa. They're not Swamiji. They're not Mataji. Who do they think that they are? And so on and so forth. So sometimes the oppression can even get worse. So there's no escape in it. No escape. There's only one solution. Now, when we hear, and Papa and others in the East talk of leading the impersonal life, sometimes we think of that, well, that must be like Mr. Spock in the series Star Trek, right? Have no feelings, have no emotions, totally unaffected by anything at all. This is a misconception. When we actually read about the lives of these great saints, I was reading about Ramana Maharshi earlier today. He was reading from some of the plays of India that are describing the spiritual journeys of these different individuals from mythology and the ancient past. And some of them are truly tragic, sad stories, people being sent out into exile and going through terrific losses and strivings. And people in India are wonderful. They hear these stories over and over again, but as they hear them, the tears just stream down their faces as they identify with these different characters and what they're going through. And Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi was no different. He would start reading this, he would start getting choked up. He couldn't even finish it. And he says, how do these play actors do these plays without breaking down in the middle of it? They must have to harden their hearts in order to do that. Now, this is from a great yoni who is what we typically think of as the highly keen intellect, somebody who is removed from all emotion and has dissected life and sorted out what is real from what is unreal. But here he is, overcome with divine emotion at the thought of these stories. And so isn't that wonderful to think that this wonderful, wonderful soul was so touched by these stories and by human compassion for the human condition? So being impersonal definitely is not about becoming an automaton, becoming immune to any emotions or anything like that. So let's talk a moment about what it might be. Becoming impersonal doesn't require that you become non-feeling. What it requires is that every circumstance and every person that you meet is God Himself who has come to you in that form. Papa used the wonderful analogy of the little child whose mother was telling him a story, and for the purpose of the story, she took this terrible mask and put on the mask and was acting out the part of this terrible, awful person. Well, the child at first was terrified to see this mask and see it being acted out this way. And then somehow it got the idea that it really wasn't the mask, that the mother was behind the mask. So, ever so tenuously, the child reached up, took hold of the mask, and pulled it down. And what did it see? It saw the smiling face of the mother behind the mask. Isn't that wonderful? There's a movie about some aliens that had come to the world, and they were kind-hearted souls, not like some of the other kinds of movies. Name of the movie was Cocoon. And one of the chief aliens who was there, they wore these skins over these light bodies that they had. And at one moment in the movie, the chief alien just pulled down his eyelid a little bit. Now came the sparkle of light. Well, you know, we're all light beings. We're light beings within this skin that we have been given. And this skin acts as a covering to our own light beings. And within the light being is this eternal purity that is untouched and unstained by any of our worldly circumstances. And no matter how bad we get, no matter to what depths we descend into, no matter what gutter water we might find ourselves drinking out of, it doesn't ever affect that inner soul, that inner spirit. Not only that, but God can use us in such miraculous and various ways without our even knowing it. Do you think that one thing happens, that even one leaf falls from a tree without it being the will of the omniscient, omnipotent power that is God? Jesus says that the very hairs on your head are numbered, that a sparrow cannot fall without the knowledge of the Father. Why is this so? It's the same as if you, existing in your body, were to stub your toe, and your toe might think, oh, I'm down here all by myself. The big lug up there is walking around, and he's just run me into the edge of that piano, and he doesn't even realize what pain I'm in. I'm trying to send the message up to that thick-headed brain that he has there, but he's not getting it. Because there he goes, he runs me into something else. And oh, it hurts so much, and I must be all alone, and nobody knows anything of the sorrow that I go through. Of course, the brain does, and it gets all the messages of all that pain. But the toe doesn't necessarily know that, because it still suffers the abuse, it still goes through the day, it still gets walked on all through the day. And so from its own perspective, it may feel totally cut off and alone, not a part of the rest of the body. But you know it's a part of your body. You know that it's there, and you know that it's been injured. In the same way, God has not only created everything, but it is that omniscient spirit who has become everything. So this is far, far different than thinking of taking a piece of wood, perhaps, and carving it into the shape of a car and then pushing it around. And if you run it into something, it's somehow devoid and divorced from who you are. This is a manifestation of God's very self. You are made up of God's stuff. And so not a single action, not a single thought, not a single word happens without the conscious knowledge of God within you. And you know, it's a marvelous thing when you turn your life over to God. Because when you do things for the most inexplicable reasons. Sometimes you have no idea why you've done a certain thing. You may get a little upset, perturbed with somebody. And you think to yourself after the fact, you know, I really wasn't perturbed with them at all, but I was acting as if I was perturbed with them. I wonder why that was. And then sometimes it comes back to you later on that there was some reason for it. And that individual comes back and maybe they relate to you why that was important to them and how maybe, perhaps, it was even helpful to them. So all kinds of inexplicable behavior may occur beyond your own conscious knowing, your own conscious doing. But it's simply out of your own inner attunement to this light, to this consciousness, which we call God. Now, when you view every individual and every situation that comes into your life, not as some individual with a long history, for they have that, who is making decisions in that moment that may be for you or against you, it may be true, on a human relative level, but instead of viewing life that way, you see it as God itself who's orchestrating every single detail. That the words that that person issues towards you is meant specifically for your growth, for your good, for your upliftment. That nothing happens by happen chance. And as a result, you take the highest lesson available to you from each and every circumstance. Many of you may have read my Spiritual India, which are my accounts of being in India. And in that, I describe many times the act that goes on in front of me, people displaying for me, and sometimes by the example of exactly what not to do. But it's a splendid example to me of how I've been in my own life. And because it's difficult to see myself, it is, really, you know. It's difficult to know how you present to the world, what you look like, how other people perceive you. Sometimes we hear our recorded voice, or sometimes we see ourselves on a video, and we go, oh, we just want to turn away, because we're so unfamiliar with who we are, and we form so many judgments about that. We can't see ourselves clearly. We can't see ourselves purely. Or the other side of it is we get very enamored with ourselves and we think quite highly of ourselves. And we even want to grow a little bit longer arms so we can pat ourselves royally on the back. And so we can congratulate ourselves for who we become and how we are in the world. And isn't that quite magnificent? So back and forth we oftentimes go, thinking of ourselves as being quite extraordinary, quite unique in the world, and then suddenly we're the worst possible creature who ever existed, and nobody as bad as us must have ever lived or breathed on this world. And back and forth we go. So living an impersonal life is not only about viewing other people from an impersonal point of view, it's also, when we take it inside, viewing ourselves from an impersonal point of view. Now that's quite a thing. How do we go about doing that? It is by seeing that everything that comes through us, our thoughts, our impulses, our desires, our wants, everything, is a result of divine consciousness operating through us, and that we are but the witness for what comes through us and how it operates in us and all about us. That every person who comes into our life is exactly orchestrated by God. And it is for our highest benefit. Now, some people are a great example of what we'd like to strive to be. And so we reach out for that. We reach up for something higher. Others are a great example of what not to be. So we carefully observe that. And we think, this is a tendency within myself, and it's something to root out and let go of. Others are a test. Can we see behind the mask and see that it is the Divine Mother who's smiling behind that mask and not take it seriously. And when we live this way, we become free. We don't become a nothing, but rather our consciousness expands. And we become more, and we are more in touch with that universal life that is flowing in us and through us. And it leads to our freedom. And as we contrast these two states of being, one is taking everything personally. You know, we walk into a room and we think, I wonder what everybody thinks of me. Oh, I put on a few pounds. You know, I'm not wearing exactly the right clothes, it looks like, for the occasion. And is my hair messed up? And maybe I'm not speaking very well. And people will judge me by that, and so on and so forth. We're absolutely preoccupied with ourselves. And of course, the opposite can be there. We can think ourselves quite wonderful, too. But also, here's a third option. We can see ourselves as manifesting the divine light within us. That we bring that light as a blessing, not through our own doing, not because we're great, but because we're simply witnessing the divine life flowing through us. It inspires us with ideas. It moves us in our speech and even in how we move our body. We feel that expansive spirit flowing out of us as divine love and joy. We truly become a blessing to those people all around us. And we're blessing ourselves as well. And that blessing flows out beyond us, just like a pond that, or a stone that lands in the middle of the pond, and the ripples go out and out and out and out. And we don't know where all that goes. I thought of a cute story one time about a yawn and how the yawn became a universal yawn. And you know how you yawn at one time, and then suddenly it becomes contagious, and somebody else in the room yawns, and then another person yawns, and so forth. And in this little scenario, somebody yawns, and it travels outside of the room by contagion, one person after another, and down the street, yawn after yawn, and finally it goes into a television studio. And then a cameraman turns around and he sees somebody in the booth and they yawn, and he yawns, and the person on the camera sees him yawn, and so the cameraman, the man in front of the camera yawns, and suddenly the whole country takes one big yawn as they watch the man on the television yawn. And it flows by contagion like that. Well, in the same way, when you give joy, when you give love, when you give the light of God, it's contagious. Somebody just feels a little better. They feel a little bit more at peace. They feel like they can handle life's ups and downs a little bit better. Maybe not even by anything that you say. It's just your presence. What you exude as you're there. Because you're emanating God stuff. That is the vibration of God, the vibration of spirit. That peace, that love, that joy that comes from you. And that you can be an important ambassador for that light wherever you go, whether it's your workplace, whether it's your home place, whether it's just being in the store, and you can feel that light emanating from you and emanating out to all those who are there. Now, this is in no sense vanity or ego. It is just simply the witness in you that is witnessing what is being manifest through you. And the more you get into tune with this, the more you realize it has absolutely nothing to do with you as an individualized sense of self. It is the universal spirit manifesting through you. And when you do that, and you live this impersonal life, when you live this impersonal life, then it gives you an eternal blessing because you live in that joy, you live in that peace. You're unaffected by the various masks of things that come at you. and you give back only love. Now, this doesn't mean that you're a doormat. Sometimes you stand up for yourself. Sometimes we're called upon to do that. We stand up and we count ourselves in. Sometimes we stand up and say, this is not right, what you're doing. It must stop. And we see to it that it does stop. Other times, we're just called upon to be a witness to what is going on. But never do we react out of fear. Never do we back down, or do we enter in out of anger. You see, those are not the driving motivations. Now, you may experience anger flowing through you, but you are never commandeered by that anger and taken over by it and driven by it, but rather you stand as the witness to what that angry energy does through you, and you are forever in control. It's like the wonderful story that Mother told about Papa, and she was standing behind Papa, and he was just giving what for to some of the workers there at the ashram. And he was doing it in quite an angry voice. And suddenly he turned around and he looked at Mother, and he just looked at her quizzically and said, Mother, do you think that Ram Dass is angry? Mother says, I don't know, Papa, are you? He says, no. He says, that's just the way you have to talk to these chaps in order to get them to do anything. And so sometimes to wake somebody up, you have to get out the 2x4 and give them a little wake-up call. But that doesn't mean to always carry around a sledgehammer with you. Sometimes a tap hammer will do. Sometimes a framing hammer or a medium-sized hammer will do. Sometimes you need the sledgehammer. So always be judicious and let God do the deciding for you. Let Him take care of it all for you. And if you do that and lead this impersonal life, you know, there's another story told about Master. And this disciple was watching Master really give it in quite strong, angry voice to one of the women devotees there in Mount Washington. And then suddenly he turned around and he looked at her and he gave her a wink. And then he turned back around and he started giving her what for again. So he was in absolute self-control. Now, why would a spiritual master give anger? It's because sometimes we're being very thick-headed about something. And that energy that's being given by that God-man or that God-woman penetrates into the soul. And because it's being done from a spiritual consciousness, it is actually a spiritual vibration that is penetrating in. And it can be a tremendous anchor in our life. It can be a tremendous source of strength. And it can change patterns within us. It's as if you had a small child and they were headed running for the edge of a cliff, and you came and you grabbed them very powerfully by their whole body and picked them up and changed their course. It's a necessary thing to do in that moment. And because that's your role as a parent to do that, then it serves a good. And in the same way, for a spiritual master, when they see somebody running headlong in the wrong direction, they may, with very great deal of spiritual power, change that direction. And that is exactly the right thing to do in that moment. And you cannot, from the outside, judge that individual and what they're doing in that moment. But if you would but know the truth, you would see that is exactly the right thing for that individual. And so this is the way that it goes, you see. Because a spiritual teacher has nothing but our highest good. They only want us to grow. So they're going to prune a few branches in order to let some other branches grow. And that more prolific than ever comes back that growth. Well, the pruning is never fun. But we appreciate the growth, don't we, when we get it. And more than that, we appreciate the flowering. And more than that, we appreciate the fruit that comes as a result of that. And so when we're eating the fruit, we count as not any of the bit of pruning that happened long, long ago now. And so it is for our highest benefit that God works in us and through us at every moment. So to lead this impersonal life does not mean that you lose out on life. It just means you become more intimately attuned to the divine life within you and everywhere about you. And you shift the focus from the things outside of you to the internal life of spirit within you. And then you emanate that out from you. You see it emanating out from you. And you are less and less affected by the things outside of you. And you become a source of blessing for this world. So in this way, let us all seek to lead this impersonal life. The little hurts and the little bumps and bruises that come along in our life will not have a big effect on us then. What we'll be more conscious of, what we'll be more aware of, is number one, the light within ourselves. And number two, if somebody is treating us badly, we're able to actually see them and see that they too are hurting, or they would not be treating us in such a way. They too are lacking that life, that light, that inner comfort. And if they were feeling their attunement to God, in all likelihood, they would not be acting. And so that is a human way, you see, of looking at it. But this divine and personal way is, that's God Himself who's come to you. And that's all you see. And when you see God in them, you help to awaken that light, that spirit, that movement of consciousness within them. So you become a blessing to them. So let us seek to live that impersonal life and see the omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent spirit operating through one and all. And that will lead us to true joy, true freedom, true happiness.